coming to you live from a remote beachfront studio on the shores of the Pacific in the People's Republic of California. It's 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes, with Bill's esteemed special guest Ed Winchester. So please welcome them for the next hour. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Carnes, Ed Winchester, and 2A Radio.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester. Good morning, Ed. How the heck are you, man?
Good morning, Bill. Great. How about you?
I'm doing good. You know, I have to say that Ed and I are connoisseurs of a specific nectar from the gods by the name of spiced rum. And as it turns out, there's some stuff called Old New Orleans Cajun Spiced Rum. Comes from a town I went to college in New Orleans, and ordered up a couple bottles of that, got it shipped in, and it came in yesterday. And Ed, what was your impression of that?
Oh, man, that stuff is great.
I don't think I have that much energy to actually respond. If any of you are spiced rum connoisseurs, I highly suggest that stuff. I just don't really suggest that you be part of early morning radio. With that being said, Ed, we have a general en route to the Pentagon, don't we?
He should be there by now. He's come halfway around the world to find out whether or not he gets to keep his job. He's already tendered his resignation, according to a lot of news sources, but it's whether or not Obama will accept it, or Obama realizes that there's very few people qualified to lead the war. So we'll have to see.
You know, I wonder if it's one of these deals where if he tenders his resignation and Obama does not accept it, if that puts a little bit more authority in the general's hands, because it would seem as though Obama would think that his hands are actually tied a little bit.
Well, there's a lot of people talking about the morale of the troops and how the war itself is going. So, you know, I suspect he'll be gone. They would rather stick someone unqualified in there, or less qualified, to prosecute the war than risk having someone trump them. Have you looked into how that whole story came about?
Are you talking about with some of the comments made through the Rolling Stone magazine article?
Yeah, the guy got the interview. He used to work for Newsweek, and he followed them around. They got stuck in Paris with the ash from the volcano, and apparently most of these comments came from one night when they were all out partying, and the reporter says they were getting hammered. So I think that if you want a good story, you get your source hammered and build some trust before that, and they probably didn't expect all the comments to be on the record.
Maybe we could get Wayne LaPierre hammered one night and ask him what in the hell the NRA is up to getting in bed with Nancy Pelosi. You think he'd tell us?
I think they're really just protecting themselves in that whole deal.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, protecting yourself is what everybody was doing up to the point where they started collecting people back in Nazi Germany, and it didn't quite work out too well when people waited for the Nazis to come for them, because everybody else said, well, you know, they're not coming for me, and that's the way I see this thing with the NRA. Guys, we have some outros coming up here. We're headed into the first break. Stay tuned. We got plenty coming for the rest of the day. So you got Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester live right here from the Beachfront Studio on 2A Radio.
Coming to you live from the warm shores of the Communist Pacific Palisades. Please excuse their conduct. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes and his guest, Ed Winchester. Join them at 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back, everybody. Sorry, I lost where my mute button was here. You know, on the taking out of the last segment, we talked for a moment about Wayne LaPierre and the NRA, and we're talking about the Disclosure Act. And let me tell you what Disclosure is actually an acronym. And it stands for Democracy is Strengthened by Casting Light on Spending in Elections Act. And what it really is, it seeks to strengthen campaign finance disclosure rules in response to the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling this last January. Now, there's not a single word in there about guns in the bill, but what it does do is it limits, by definition, the type of groups that can actually speak out during election years when it comes to, well, voting records and the way people are doing things. It really limits people in election years from essentially learning the truth. So they're calling this disclosure, but in fact what they're doing is it's a protection act, and it is designed to protect those who otherwise are lousy politicians and don't want the groups that are out there to actually tell you really how all these lousy politicians voted. I mean, they don't want you to hear about how Pelosi voted or how Reid voted or how Schumer voted or any of that garbage.
Well, you know, some of this is based off those comments during the State of the Union address where he criticized the Supreme Court. You know, a lot of people are talking about that some of the, Roosevelt declared war on the Supreme Court. In fact, he actually packed it with more judges, as I recall, to change the number to try to get them to buy off on his policies.
Yeah, during the really screwed up deal.
Yeah, because they were sending parts of the New Deal back saying it wasn't right. So I just wonder if that's probably part of this.
You know, it most likely is just based on how Obama's really doing his very best to rule things out of the White House. I mean, you also heard in that same State of the Union speech where he was saying, if we can't do it legislatively, I'll just write an executive order. And how executive orders have not been found to violate the whole Balance of Power Act, it just absolutely blows me away. I mean, I read something just last weekend that was talking about how the federal government has no power and authority whatsoever to make criminal laws other than what's specifically stated in the Constitution. And it was a proposal that's going through the House legislature, the state legislature, pardon me, in New Hampshire that was as telling the federal government, pardon me, telling the government that you have certain powers delegated through the Constitution. Through the Constitution, through the other founding articles of this country, being the Constitution, the amendments to the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, if you don't have the authority specifically outlined by these documents, and you just give it to yourself by passing other laws that are essentially unconstitutional, what you're doing is creating the Constitution to be completely null and void, and therefore we in the state of New Hampshire are not bound by following it or your express authority given in it. If you're going to violate it, then that means that it's all null and void to begin with. It's like a contract. So it was very interesting, and I read provisions of it on the air, and it was I enjoyed reading it quite a bit. I never have known much about the state of New Hampshire, but to see that...
Live free or die, baby.
That's right.
No personal income tax.
And, you know, it's the same thing in Nevada. No personal income tax coming in. Alaska is the same way. As a matter of fact, Alaska, they actually pay you to live there.
Well, that's part of the pipeline deal. Everybody in Alaska gets a check every year. And actually, Alaska has a sovereign wealth fund where they have collected more taxes than they spent, but that gives them a buffer for a very long, snowy day that could happen, and they're actually wisely invested and doing okay.
Could you imagine if 49 other states, well, wouldn't it need all 49? Under Jeb Bush, Florida became very solvent.
Well, speaking of which, he finally spoke out and said, you know, some of the criticisms you're leveling against my brother aren't very fair, and everybody thinks we're going to be seeing more of Jeb Bush. He also... his son is also somebody that should be watched as well. I know you don't like political dynasties, but Jeb Bush is a great guy.
Actually, that's exactly where I was going to go. I am not a fan of political dynasties whatsoever. Not a big fan of political nepotism. When they believe that Ted Kennedy's seat belonged to a Kennedy, we're going to have to tell them
to the people of the state of Massachusetts. Unfortunately, what happened to Scott Brown?
Yeah. Well. Anyway, I like Jeb Bush. I think he's done very good things. Of course, a governor oftentimes can get a lot more things done than a president. I remember the second worst president in history was Jimmy Carter. And until about 2 years ago, he was the worst president in history. My 2 cents worth. And when he was governor of Georgia, he was actually very successful, even as a Democrat, of really making the government a little smaller by closing down a number of state offices that just seemed to really, be superfluous. And as president, he vowed to do the same thing. And out of the 40-some-odd, if memory serves correct, state offices he closed down as governor of Georgia, he was only able to do that with 2 here at the federal level. And, of course, ever since Reagan and beyond, mostly since Bush, and Clinton, we've had many, many more spring up. I mean, look at all the Department of Homeland Security and all little branches that have come off of there.
Well, but with DHS, that kind of made sense. I mean, because you had so many agencies doing similar jobs, but in different branches of the government. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like they diminished the other departments that they pulled these things from. Like the Coast Guard was under Treasury.
Yes. So was Secret Service. Secret Service is now under DHS, but Secret Service still does Department of Treasury-related things when it comes to counterfeiting, which is interesting because if you actually look at how the federal government is supposed to be handling printing money and doing their own coining, and they have somehow authorized that in the Federal Reserve Act to do it, so the Federal Reserve is, in fact, creating money that's counterfeit to the production of positive economic wealth here in the United States by taking away from the gold standard and going to Keynesian economics, which, what was his name, Robert Keynesian? Was it Robert his first name? Mr. What the hell? Kane. All right. He said himself, this is only a model to look at, and as we've looked at this going down the road, we realize that, in fact, it will not last in the long run, so don't do it. What is the entire world running on right now, for the most part? Keynesian economics. Gold standards are gone, except for Germany, who they don't use a gold standard. What they've done is they've started collecting up a lot of property. Now that backs up the German financial base.
Well, the American government would never start collecting property, would it?
I don't think so, because they already own 86% of Nevada, and they've already started moving on with mineral rights. Oh, wait, hold on. Maybe they are doing that, Ed.
They're only planning on acquiring 10 million acres this year.
My God. What is the federal government doing owning land other than where a military base sits or something? Shouldn't that be a lease anyhow?
You don't understand. It's preserved for our future, for our kids, because they're going to be homeless anyway with the amount of debt we're sending them.
So what are you going to do, have up a bunch of homeless refugee camps on federal lands? Thank you. I think FEMA's putting those together. Wow, it's funny how this whole conversation is just tying together.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers, absolutely. We got a couple of mimosas here by your lovely, wonderful wife, Paula. Wow. That is the way to start the day, man. I tell you what. All right, well, I'm going to start reading to you the NRA's response to the Disclosure Act. It says that we appreciate the concerns that some NRA members have raised regarding our position on H.R. 5175, the Disclosure Act. Unfortunately, critics of our positions have mistaken or misunderstood the facts. We're about to hear the facts here. We have never said we would support any version of the bill. To the contrary, we clearly stated NRA's strong opposition to the Disclosure Act, as introduced in a letter to the members of Congress on May 26th. Though the courts and Congress, through the courts and Congress, the NRA has consistently and strongly opposed any effort to restrict the rights of our 4 million members to speak and have their voices on behalf of the gun owners nationwide. Now, realize it's saying on behalf of their 4 million members. Forget the other 296 million people in this country. H.R. 5175 would put a gag order on the NRA during elections and threaten our members' freedoms of association by forcing us to turn our donor list over to the federal government. We would also be forced to list our top donors on all election-related television, radio, and internet ads and mailings, even mailings to our own members. We refuse to let this Congress impose these unconstitutional restrictions on our association. So what they did was they cut a deal.
Yep.
All they're doing in this letter is confirming what they did. They're using words that people might construe to be, pardon me, we don't agree with this, period. But what they're failing to say is we don't agree with this, period. However, we've carved out an exception just for the NRA because we owe it to our members.
It also will affect some groups, maybe like AARP. It has to do with how many members you have, that you're active in each state, and how long you've been around. So.
All right, guys, more to come after the break. You're listening to Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester live right here on Two Way Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back your hosts, Bill Carnes with Ed Winchester and Two-Way Radio.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control.
Sitting here in the beachfront studio, waving the mimosas up and around in the air, listening to Will Smith in Summertime. Ah, that's a refreshing way to start the day. Ed, you've learned a little something about a particular city government, and I mean, you know me, I'm no big fan of any sort of government doing much of anything at all, but this is a really interesting story, folks. Where did you find this, Ed?
Okay, the city of Maywood, which is a little tiny city, 1.2 square miles, very densely populated. I'm not saying the people are dense, I'm just saying the population is. They're down, I believe it's down close to the airport, Los Angeles International, and they are completely contracting out their entire services. They're disbanding the police department and laying off all city employees. They're going to contract out to the county. Now, what doesn't make sense to me is why they're remaining an incorporated city if they're going to do that, because they get all the property tax revenues, and they're claiming to save like $50,000 a month by doing this contracting. It is a very rough town, and they ought to, if they're going to have the county provide all the services, why should they have the benefit of collecting the taxes? It just ought to revert over to the county. There's been years of issues there, and they are working through those. They had a lot of excessive force complaints. It's a lot of very low-income housing. I remember meeting a guy that worked for Maywood, and I said, I've never heard of it, and I know the L.A. Basin pretty well, and he goes, we're 1.2 square miles. I mean, do they even need cars?
Well, here's a... let me get this straight. You're saying that they expect to save $50,000 a year, right?
$50,000 a month, I believe.
$50,000 a month. And who's left on the payroll after this? The mayor and city council?
Pretty much.
Okay, and they're not going to have much to do because they're giving anything to the... Do you think they voted themselves a pay raise at the same time?
I doubt it, but they the city treasurer was at the meeting telling them they were a bunch of buffoons. Of course, they're losing, that person's losing their job too, so...
Well, I have to tell you, I live in the small town of Pahrump, Nevada, and Pahrump is a township. It is the largest settlement in Nye County. And Nye County, Nevada, is the third largest county in the country, landmass-wise. There's, San Bernardino County, California's the largest. There's another county, I forget the name of it, in Texas, which is number two. And number three is Nye County, landmass-wise. There's really nothing there. There's less than 100,000 people in the county. There's probably less than 60,000 people in the county. 37,000 to 40,000 in Pahrump. We are an unincorporated township. the actual county seat is Tonopah, Nevada, with, I don't know, maybe a few thousand people. It's been around since the 1800s. It's a mining town. That's where the actual county seat is, but nothing goes on there. You drive down the middle of the town, and half the stuff is just closed up. The Mitzvah right. Hotel, all of the old-school hardware and general stores, not much going on. A couple of truck stops, a couple of gas stations, and I think a grocery store. There's really just not much going on. So the people who live in Pahrump, who sit on the town board, have been wanting to look at incorporating as a city. Not a lot of people in town really want to have that, because all that means is more government.
Right.
They want to make Pahrump a city and then move to make it the county seat. Why? I don't know. Effectively, it operates as the county seat.
Most of the government's already there, so.
Most of it already is. There, you know, the thing is occasionally the county commission, pardon me, the district attorney and the sheriff and a couple of people like that actually have to make a trip up to Tonopah every, I don't know, couple of months or something, just to kind of wave and say hello, clock in, I was here, clock back out, and make the 3.5-hour drive back down to Pahrump.
But, and to get there, you have to drive out of the county to get back into Nye County and Tonopah, right?
You do, actually, up U.S. Highway 95. So, anyhow, a lot of us in town have no interest in becoming a city, because then what they'll want to do is they'll want to take the people who are on wells and increase property taxes to pay for a local water system, and then they want to take them off of septic and put them onto a city sewer system. Now, none of that really affects me, because I live in a master plan community. We already have our own water. We have our own sewage you know, reclamation area. We have all of that. It's on a golf course community, and all of that water is actually reclaimed and then used in the water throughout the entire golf course property. It's a very, very smart system, very green, very eco-friendly, and you know, I'm one of those few people in the actual town that has to pay for water twice, once to come into my house and then once to leave. So
you'll find that's a fairly common practice throughout the country. I paid for it once on my electric bill because it comes out of the ground.
Exactly my point, which is the way most of it happens around the town of Pahrump. So, not a big fan, and I would hope that maybe the people on the town board would learn something from, what is it, Maywood. Maywood. Did you meet Barney Fife? Was that the guy? Or maybe his name was like, you know, Barry Fife, Maywood. Well, so the town of Mayberry and up in California is going down with their one bullet cop and 1.2 square miles. Yeah, I bet they were on skateboards. It is California.
Actually, they probably do have a lot of bicycle police. There's a lot of housing projects there, and it's a tough neighborhood.
Sounds like it. All right, guys, stay tuned. More to come after the break. This is Bill Carson at Winchester Live right here on 2A Radio.
No more time. Each tear falls from my eyes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. If you didn't think you'd had enough already, please welcome back the black sheep of the RBN family. And your hosts for 2A Radio, Bill Carnes and Ed Winchester. Call 1-800-313-9443. Guys, hey, guys, you guys know you're back on the air. Oh.
Me and my gang.
So refilling the mimosas here. I got to tell you, we need to come up with the mimosa song. The mimosa, mimosa. All right, guys, I feel it necessary to speak about the Chicago shootings in Chicago versus McDonough versus Chicago. By the way, if any new listeners out there, please don't judge the content of today's show on the way that things normally go on 2A radio. I mean, Ed and I are on vacation and being fed mimosas with a twisted arm in the mornings. We'll be just fine. over the weekend, this last weekend, 52 people?
52.
52 people were shot, some of them fatally, over the Father's Day weekend in Chicago. Now, it didn't even make the front page of the Chicago newspaper. I wonder why. Is it Daley's power that is wielded like a big shovel of burying the actual news and information in Chicago?
I'd say that just violence is nothing new there.
ABC News put it in this way, Ed. They said, most of the weekend shootings took place in poor neighborhoods on the city's south and west sides. Those areas are away from downtown and tourist attractions. Perhaps one reason might be the city seemed to shrug its shoulders at the violence, said Jim O'Shea, who is editor of the Chicago News Cooperative. He said, I think people just say, it's a bunch of gangbangers shooting each other. Now, what do the police and other officials say? Well, they put the blame on the gangs and easy-to-access guns, despite one of the strictest bans on handguns in the country. Wait a minute. They have a law that says you can't have guns, handguns, in Chicago, and people are violating that law?
I don't understand that, do you? I mean, it's against the law. Hello?
You know, you would think if you pass a law that that would make things all better again. But they didn't. So you mean to tell me that people who aren't interested in following a law on a ban on handguns aren't interested in following a law on, against shooting other people for, you know, murder or attempted murder?
Apparently.
Say it isn't so.
Well, I guess they're just what they call scoff laws. They're just doing what they want.
Wow. You know, it's just one of these things where I can't believe that if someone would otherwise be inclined to kill somebody, or at least try to kill somebody with a gun, that when they learn that the possession of that gun would be an extra illegal act, not to mention the actual shooting of somebody, if they realize, oh, wait a minute, I want to be able to go out and shoot people for whatever reason, because I'm a scumbag, and I've got, you know, drugs, money, power, influence, whatever I want to have, and I'm going to create it at my own hand by the use of a handgun, but I'm not allowed to have a handgun? Wow. I better change tactics and go get something. Can I get a crowbar or a Louisville Slugger? Can I use that? Can I use just a great big old kitchen knife or maybe a big Bowie knife from an Army-Navy store? What are these people thinking?
Those are a little harder to conceal. Remember, we don't carry handguns because they're powerful.
No.
It's because they're portable.
Quite portable and concealable. So, people are already violating the smaller law of not carrying a gun in an effort to violate the larger law of murder, attempted murder, extortion, racketeering.
I suspect that these theft. People would not be allowed to possess a gun legally anyway.
Okay, so even if the law said that they could have a gun,
they would still be prevented by other laws, you know, probably that whole felon in possession kind of stuff. And you know, I'm sure that they've made themselves acquainted with the justice system to the point where they're probably not allowed to have such things.
Okay, so if regardless of what a law says or doesn't say, these people that do this are not going to be interested in following any law whatsoever, then what do the people do? Because it says
they sit home and wait to be victims.
All right.
Because they can't do anything else.
What's the answer, Ed? I'm trying to come up with one.
Self-protection, self-accountability, some good training.
Imagine that. So let's see what Alan Gottlieb, Executive Vice President of the Second Amendment Foundation, says. It says they are one of the plaintiffs in the case of McDonald versus Chicago. He's quick to make a point that, quote, Chicago has become a slaughterhouse where defenseless victims are terrorized by armed thugs who have taken full advantage of an unarmed populace. Now, Chicago's Mayor Daley and his predecessors, one of them being his father, who perpetrated this ban, are wading knee-deep in the blood of hundreds of crime victims who should have had the means to defend themselves. Within days, we should have a ruling from the Supreme Court which puts an end to the insanity and gives the citizens of Chicago back their rights to defend themselves. We took Daley to court because we trust his citizens more than he does with their own self-defense rights. Chicago residents have endured the terror of public disarmament for almost three decades, and all they have to show for it is a bloody count. Mayor Daley should be ashamed. Now, that was by Alan Gottlieb of Second Amendment Foundation. Alan's a very, very straight-up guy. I don't know if you've ever met him or talked with him. He is a very straight-up guy. And I applaud him for all of the good things that the Second Amendment Foundation does when it comes to doing court actions. They took the city of Seattle to court over their over the former Mayor Nichols' executive order ban on guns in parks, which is, of course, pitched. You know, it's just it's crazy how people will do this sort of thing. You know, Daley, they also did the effective strong-arm takeover of the schools back in the 90s. And now if you look at the testing scores of the school-age kids in Chicago now as opposed to 20 years ago.
Now, isn't this the same Daley who had cemeteries show up and vote? I think
that it was.
Yeah, and let's see. If you, there's the whole deal in Chicago is they have these. You get elected, and then you start filling your staff with your political donors. And one of the big powerhouses was a guy named Stroger. He had the people who were helping him were called Soldiers for Stroger, and he was very strong. And there was actually a guy they called Quarters that was on the staff of one of these guys. Because he got that nickname because he had stolen like over $1 million in quarters from parking meters when he was an employee of the city. So he gets booted, but then because he's a supporter of one of these guys, they put him in a job where he has no responsibility. And it's pretty crazy. I mean, the whole political structure there is just basically a lost cause. I mean, they'd have to really just start over from scratch.
They didn't put Quarters in charge of parking enforcement of the city?
He had some do-nothing job where he was making probably about $100 a year, coasting, showing up for work. And
do they have anybody named, like, Lefty or Bruiser on the city payroll?
Hard to say. I mean, they got enough nefarious characters as it is.
I know. It sounds like a comic book reel, doesn't it?
It does.
It really does. And, you know, you're talking about Daley, who's cut from the same cloth of his father, who was single-handedly responsible for the 1960 presidential election and doing the same sort of thing with votes and strong-arming the Electoral College to put Kennedy in office. So that's the family we're dealing with yet again.
So you're saying the apple didn't fall far from the tree?
No, not at all. And I'm thinking William Tell probably could have gotten a better shot on that apple than I did on episode 3 of Top Shot. Oh, man. So we're waiting on the decision from the Supreme Court in McDonald v. Chicago, which is due out in June. I had suspected it would probably come later on in the session. They break, first part of July? Is that right, Ed?
Yeah.
Take their summer break until
October.
October, yeah. So that's a pretty nice break. July, August, September, come back October. That's not bad. That's a little bit off of school time, but still pretty nice. And I've expected it a little late because it tends to be, if there's a more, sweeping or controversial sort of a decision, it usually comes towards the end of their session. 2 years ago in D.C. versus Heller, it came out on June 26th of 2008. Expect the same sort of thing here, obviously. I mean, what is the 23rd of the month? I mean,
now, wait a minute. We had to have this new case because D.C. versus Heller apparently specifically only applied to federal territories. What's that decision, 65 pages?
Yeah.
And having read through that, did you see this only applies to federal territories anywhere in there?
No. As a matter of fact, if you read the decision, it talks about how it would be applied throughout the country. And, of course, the city of Chicago wants to consider that to not be incorporated through the 14th Amendment citizen. I don't get it. You know, to interpret the Constitution that everybody now is somehow a 14th Amendment citizen. Now, keep in mind, the 14th Amendment was designed to free the slaves. However, at the time, as some sort of concession to get the 14th Amendment passed through all of the states, they did not allow, if you read the 14th Amendment and you read it very clearly and you read it with the intent of the men who wrote it at the time they wrote it in the 1860s, it is designed to offer citizenship to slaves, to newly freed slaves, through the Emancipation Proclamation, but it does not give the freed slaves the same rights as the original class of citizens. And that was by intent, because the intent was to get more states to approve it. Now, so they were free, but didn't necessarily have all the same rights, all the same abilities and covenants as of the original class citizen. What's happened, Ed, in the last 150 years? And it certainly happened way before, you know, the last three, four, or five decades, is the federal government has done their very best to try to list everyone as a 14th Amendment citizen. Virtually every single federal and state form that you fill out, county form, city form, all of them are written under the provisions of the 14th Amendment, which would take otherwise original class citizens and take away a lot of their ability to exercise their rights and their powers and procedures for adjudication and being able to really have their rights interpreted properly. It's a very interesting and wicked web that they've woven. So what we end up having is everyone is considered a 14th Amendment citizen through all the different forms. So when Chicago says, look, the Second Amendment has never been incorporated through the states, through the Supreme Court, via the 14th Amendment.
Okay, I just have a problem with that because it's part of the blanking Constitution. Why are we even having this argument? I mean, I just don't understand what planet these people are from. I mean, if we have the First Amendment, and I mean, if they took the First Amendment like they took the Second Amendment, it's crazy.
Well, because the first, the third, the fourth, a lot of these other amendments have already been incorporated through the 14th, meaning that the 14th Amendment class of citizens have had all of these things added to them through court decisions. They're now more like the original class of citizen, not entirely, but more like them. The Second Amendment, they haven't done that. So what the city of Chicago is claiming is basically everybody's a 14th Amendment citizen, so because of that, you haven't incorporated the Second Amendment against them. We can control all of them, and it's now a 10th Amendment deal. You can't tell the states what to do unless you rule on this. So with that being said, what they're doing is they're claiming that everybody in Illinois is a 14th Amendment citizen, not an original class citizen. If that's the case, anyone who is an actual original class citizen, which means they are not a bona fide, I'm an actual freed slave. And I believe there's none left surviving in the United States at this point in time. I don't believe there's anybody who was alive in 1865 that's alive today.
I'd say that's a pretty safe bet.
So with that being said, there's all kinds of holes in the arguments of the Chicago case, of Chicago's arguing of this case, and they've seen it. That's the reason it got to the Supreme Court in a year and a half.
Right.
Well, because they realized, kept losing.
Absolutely. They realized, the Supreme Court realized when the D.C. versus Heller was misinterpreted that they were going to have to answer the question again, and thus we have McDonald v. Chicago.
Well,
how many people do you think have died since Heller was published between now and then while they're doing this case and continuing to let the people of Chicago just be unable to protect themselves? I wonder how many people in Chicago have died as a result of being unable to protect themselves.
Well, you're talking several hundred have been killed. It's got to be. It's got to be 400 or 500 people.
Well, and as we talked about yesterday, felonious assaults, too.
Absolutely. So, but the question is, how many of those folks who are actually shot would have been prevented, them being shot and killed would have been prevented, or even, you know, knife attacks, whatever, if they were actually carrying guns? Because what we end up with is a society of people who are not interested in actually protecting themselves. Like here in California, there's too many people that are, oh my gosh, there's a stigma of guns that I've seen on TV that I don't want to have anything to do with them. I can't believe you think you have to have one. So it's not that guns have changed, it's just the perception of change. So would people in Chicago actually arm themselves?
Well,
let's hope so.
Well, but we also probably have to look at the demographics of some of the victims, because some of the people being killed are also some of the same people who are doing the killing, and you know, there is a gang violence culture that has to be dealt with.
It's true. Ed, stick with me. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be back after the break.
Man, I can see the lights. Goes out the night rolling, man. Just like a long lost friend you ain't seen in a while. Can't help but smile.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.BillCarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BillCarnes.com and click on the NFA tab.
This is what happens when you vacation on the beach with friends and are still responsible for a live radio show. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes and his special guest, Ed Winchester. Please excuse their conduct. I mean, they are on vacation.
Greatest lover and a dancing machine. I get loud, I get proud, and it gets worse.
Hey guys, we're back. Bill Carnes and special Ed Winchester.
Yeah, thanks.
Calling in about 14th Amendment related topics, we have Mark in Georgia on line one. Mark, welcome to 2A Radio. How you doing, buddy?
The Lord disciplines those he loves, and he's been loving me so much, I'm punch drunk. I'm like, why can't the Lord love up on somebody else for a while?
You're a good man, Mark. Tell me what the latest
is. Well, I'm aspiring to mediocrity, and it's an improvement. Well, one thing about the 14th Amendment we need to be clear on. It was coerced upon the South in a state of martial law. It is a fraudulently asserted, like, actually the thing is there was an original 13th Amendment that got yanked and another one put in its place. That original 13th Amendment is lawful. All the substitute 13th Amendment and all that follow will need to be reviewed to see what's legitimate and needs to be kept, what needs to be tossed. Here's a subtlety. It doesn't state this explicitly. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except for punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist within the United States. You know what that implies? If you voluntarily become a slave because you didn't read the fine print that nobody bothered to show you, well, gee, that's too bad. And that's what, when you get a Social Security number, I know that they never bothered to tell you this, and it's implied. You look down and it says, no state shall make or abridge it. The term there is privileges or immunities. And so, excuse me, what about our rights?
That's right. Privileges and immunities.
You can take your rights and you can exchange them for these privileges and immunities. That's part of the involuntary voluntary servitude.
Now, which is exactly what separates that class of citizenry from the original class of citizenry. That's exactly what the difference is, which is where Chicago's argument in the case of Chicago, of McDonald v. Chicago, where they're claiming essentially everybody, at least in their ideals, at least in Illinois, if not the entire rest of the country, are 14th Amendment citizens that don't have all of those rights presented to them and granted to them.
Right. Well, here's where the real stinker shows up, is that they assert the word rebellion or insurrection. There was no rebellion. The South simply decided to leave. Had the North just left us alone. Now, granted, there's a whole lot more because the plutocracy that existed back then, the British Crown and other agents, they created the environment to cause the South to leave. And that needs to be understood as the root behind it. There were provocations going on. But when you read the Section 4, the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payments of pensions and bounties. In other words, when we pay a mercenary to go after somebody, under kind of a letter of mark and reprisal, that debt's still legitimate. But you read it just a little bit further around, and basically it says, nor shall any state assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States. Excuse me. Again, there was no rebellion. And they assert something that is based on the, you know, it's like the victor's account of history must be viewed uncritically. Like when Eisenhower murdered 1.3 million Germans, or when FDR gave Stalin our POWs in the
Mark,
German POW. You want me to stand by?
No, the show's come to an end, my brother. I appreciate you calling in.
Tell you what, we'll
everybody. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow with special guest Kelly Bashand from Top Shot. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us. Bill and Ed will be back tomorrow. Please email your comments to bill@2aradio.com. Unreal, guys. Unreal.